Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Artists Helping Artists. We are the number one art show on Blog Talk Radio. This is Leslie Seda, and it's hard to believe, but yes, I am in South Pasadena, California. And I have my October and November co-host on the line. I hope I told her she was doing November or asked her nicely. Margaret Sheldon.
You know, you never have
about
to ask.
November?
Did you we slipped talk it about in last week, and I thought,
oh, right.
November, okay, that'll be fun.
You know who my December co-host is?
Who?
Carrie Waller, all the way from Hong Kong. Or where is she? Tokyo, from Japan.
Well, that'll be great, yeah.
I know, how cool is that?
I love following her on Facebook. I feel like I have
a
friend in far corners of the earth, so
exactly.
That'll be great to hear her voice. Good.
I know. So how have you been, my friend? Oh, my gosh, I'm back from Hawaii, and then I did a three-day workshop, and then I have a three-day workshop next week, which is crazy. And then I'm done for like a month, and I have one more. And then I'm going to put my workshop schedule together for next year, and I'm not teaching 14 workshops next year. I can 100% promise you that.
Well, is that a little of the Carol Marine influence sneaking in, or just were you overloaded this year?
No, I was totally overloaded. I was gone 31 days in like 40 days. I mean, that's ridiculous.
I know, you were with me for part of that.
Yeah, I know.
Well, it was fun for those of us who got to enjoy your company. This has been a stretch for me of 2 weeks where I have not seen my husband, and as he said on the phone last night, this is the longest stretch we've gone in 33 years of marriage and probably 38 years of, you know, sort of being a couple. So it's very strange. You know, you just sort of, but that's all right. He comes home tomorrow night.
Good. Just in time for the weekend.
That's
very
right.
Well. So it's a busy time, but you know what? We are blessed because, as you know, we have the job where it's like we're on vacation every day.
That is the gospel according to Leslie. I agree. And
yes, I know.
I just wish my vacation wasn't quite so busy. It seems like, you know, I am going to write like a blog post about this, how when you at long last clear everything off the table so you can focus on art, you turn your back for 1 second and that table is covered with things that need your attention immediately. So I am learning a little bit about time management and struggling with it. The last 2 weeks have been kind of crazy, but the crazy has passed and now it's time to talk art.
And my dog wants to be on the radio show, apparently.
That's all right, as long as mine, don't
Such
hear him.
Such a professional show as I'm yelling, sport, zip it. Okay. Well, I don't know what he's barking at, and I do apologize. But all right, so I made a commitment yesterday that I am going to do my online class on how to build an art website, and I'm going to finish it by the end of the year. And by saying it on this show, I know I'll do it.
Well, good. Are you going to call it a webinar like you did in the past?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
And it's basically going to be a redo of what I've done before. The program that I use has been through two huge transformations, one which just happened again. Thank heavens I didn't do this earlier. But I feel pretty confident if I use the newest and greatest version that I'll be safe for about a year. But I've had many artists contact me. So
I'm going to ask you a question.
Yes.
As I feel like a member of the, you know, the Hair Men's Club, like I'm not only a talker, I'm a user. I ordered and built my website using your first version, and it was very helpful to me because I really do need to stop and then go do it and then start the webinar up again.
Right.
And you kept access to that up, I think, for a long time, as long as I needed it, probably a year. You should think about people like me who are like returning students, because I have to redo my website, and I would love if there was a way to, you know, give me a little discount for being a former user. Those of us who need to update. I know.
Gosh.
Well, you need to think about that. You need to think about like a tune-up class as opposed to the full deal for folks who have already built their websites. That's a little on-air
advice.
Okay, that's
a great idea. Now I have a double project. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
Now let's talk about oil painting because it's more fun.
No, one other thing. Another thing I'm doing.
What?
I'm going to have an open house in November, the weekend before Thanksgiving, and I'm saying this on the air, I've never done this before. And I'm doing it. And I'm going to start promoting it like crazy because it's only going to be 5 weeks away, which is a little bit short term.
Are you talking about an art open house or a social open house?
An art social wine drinking open house. Mm-hmm. And the main reason is to get people in here to see my abstracts and, of course, my traditional oils because I have been painting a lot. So, yeah, I'm going to do it.
That sounds like a great idea.
Yeah.
And you're right,
yeah.
5 weeks.
Yikes. I know. That's crazy. But that's okay. I'm going to order I'm actually going to do a traditional mailing and a ton of email blasts. So
I think that's a good idea. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'll keep
see
you
how it goes.
Posted. And, well, you probably won't get too many notifications since you live in Boston. Because you
can. Well, I'm assuming you'll put it on Facebook.
Well, I will, but you can screen your Facebook friends based on the location they live in when you do a post. So I am going to be posting to people who only live in Southern California on a every 4 day basis. But anyway, yeah, I know it's hard to believe. So anyway,
unbelievable is right. Okay.
As I mentioned, I have taught a lot of workshops this year, and I've recently been incorporating some new exercises into my classes, and I tried one this week that went really well, and it was a four-part exercise that had value study, limited brush strokes, changing the painting into your favorite color palette. It was really fun, and there's a huge value, I think, in sharing some of these exercises to all of our listeners, because if you're a painter and you want to get better, you can do some of these exercises on your own or with other artists in your studio or when you're plein air painting. And also, if you're a workshop teacher, we all know the value of using these exercises and kind of rejuvenating our workshops, and it's kind of fun to be able to get to share and hear some of these ideas. So on today's show, we're going to discuss some of those we think are the most interesting and beneficial. And also, I reached out to Facebook just this week, and we probably had 10 great additional ideas that came in. So it's kind of fun to hear what's out there. So if you're just a painter, if you're an oil painter, an acrylic painter, a watercolorist, a teacher of any of those things or more, I think all this information is going to be very valuable. So the first one is using only one color. Because choosing a single color to paint a monochromatic painting allows you to make simpler choices. And I know in a workshop, we all get there, we're overwhelmed, we don't want to be terrible, we want to look good, we don't want to be embarrassed in front of other artists. And so doing anything to make simpler choices, especially when a ton of new information is coming your way, is great. You can use white to lighten and create values. And I know these can be very beautiful paintings themselves because the values are so essential to reading the painting. And by taking those color choices out, which has a tendency to freeze some people, you really simplify the task. And often the result is an aha, which I love that term, as you know, a moment of finally understanding values. So just one color and white to lighten and change the different values is a great way to start out a painting. And it's so obvious and so simple, yet so few teachers do that in workshops, which I think is kind of cool.
Which, considering how everyone struggles, especially at the beginning, but some people continue to struggle understanding what value is.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what a great thing. It's one of my favorite paintings. In fact, I just looked over my shoulder. It's on the shelf. Was a painting done that way using just ultramarine and white. And it's a still life of a big, huge bowl of roses. And they're gorgeous. It does read. You kind of, yeah, talk about nuances. Anyway, it makes me want to do another one of those. The next exercise that Leslie and I discussed was counting strokes. So usually in this kind of an exercise, what happens is you approach the canvas and you know that you have to get the painting down in a set number of strokes. I know I've done them where there's been as little as, you know, 25 strokes. And let me tell you, It forces you to make really bold choices and to use a big brush, because you kind of think you're cheating, but, you know, the joke's on you because you learn so much that way. You know, if you pick up a big old number 12, you're thinking, okay, I can get this whole dark area in one stroke. Well, you do, and not only that, but you see how powerful that one bold mm-hmm. choice can be. It's really tough to do these. But what happens is you kind of get out of your own head, and you end up with a painting that's usually pretty clean and crisp and very fresh. I know that Nancy Darling mentioned on the AHA Facebook page, she took a watercolor workshop with Irving Shapiro a long time ago, and the exercise was to form teams of two, and one make a painting with just 100 brushstrokes while the other person was counting, and then you'd switch. Maybe, you know, 100 brushstrokes, I feel like, is must have been a pretty big painting.
Although, me, you know, I'll tell you, because we just did this in my class before we did this, this is how I got the idea for the show, once I did these exercises. But we did four different double pair paintings all on one on one canvas. And that idea I got from Carol from last week's show. Because remember how she mentioned if you
it
do four on one, it stops being a painting that could be for sale.
Right. It's
and
not
it becomes
so precious.
An exercise.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But, and you know, I think she said she splits a 6x6 into fours. And I'm like, that's like the tiniest painting. So
you know
I
what?
Used an 8x8.
I think one of the first workshops I ever took was with Carol. And I'm going to... You'll hear my chair roll here as I lean back. Oops, yep, knocked my phone over. But it was true. That was what
really?
She does. She divides a 6x6, and I think
tiny.
What we did was orange slices. Just one, and you know, you could do that.
Oh,
but
yeah.
The difference in the painting, she had us do two, one where we were fussing on it, and the other one where you had to get it down with, like, the, you know, fewest strokes possible. It was so much more painterly. I would tell everyone.
Oh, wait, but that's what happened in my workshop this week. And it's funny because people have a tendency with the palette knife to just go over and over and over and kill it. And, you know, I say kill it to death. And so I said they had 50 strokes to do the pair. And I said, but I'm going to do it first. Mm-hmm. And I said, after I did mine, I said, no, it's 25 strokes per pair.
Good.
And
you fuss too much. Mm-hmm.
And that was hard to do. But everyone, I mean, it was unbelievable. It was so powerful. So it was just kind of cool.
That's great.
How you put the paint down, leave it, and don't kill it. Because, you know, well, you all want those lovely brush strokes or palette knife painting strokes. So it's cool.
Definitely.
Okay. Okay. The next one is limited time. So here you're given a setup to paint with the knowledge that the clock is ticking. So if you know you only have 30 minutes or however long it is to complete a painting, you are judicious in your choices. And you have no choice but to get the important choices made and commit to the painting. And this is so important because I can't believe how much time we waste in getting a painting done. And I see it in my students all the time, and I do the same thing in my studio. You procrastinate, you think, you overthink things, you psych yourself out. And when you have a limited time to get a painting done and you jump in, I really think 75% of the time you end up with a better painting. So I love this idea. Mm-hmm. Absolutely love this idea.
I don't know where I read it, but online when I was sort of, you know, looking around to see if there was anything I hadn't already heard of, there was one teacher, and I wish I could remember who it was. If I come up with it, I will give him credit. But I thought this was great. He let his students have 45 minutes to do a painting and then put that panel away, take out a fresh paint, you know, go get a cup of coffee, come back. Now you've got 30 minutes to do the same painting. Finish it, take a break, walk away, new panel, 15 minutes, do the painting. And he said...
Wait, it started at the 45 to 30 to 15?
Right. And
oh,
he
wow.
said each painting was better than the painting before.
Well, part of
right?
it has to be that you've figured out and made decisions in the first painting that you can then use that knowledge in the second and the third painting. But
sure.
the fact that you're not overthinking and having too much time and you just have to lay down the paint helps
you,
tremendously.
Right. Right. Just get that
wow.
thing down. Kind of fun. See,
yeah.
I know. I want to do some of these myself now.
I know. That's awesome. That is awesome. Cool.
All right.
Yeah. So you're up next, my dear.
Number
four.
Mm-hmm. Gosh, I thought I talked so much about limited time paintings. I'm going to talk now about something I've seen you and Dreema do, which is the upside down painting. And I have to tell you, this makes sense to me when we talk about quieting our brains. When you take an image, you know, if you're going to be painting from a photograph or something, this is a great exercise. Take the image, turn it upside down. Now your brain is forced to stop thinking about what it knows to be true. And what it does is it simplifies the subject. All you see are shapes and values. And if you can let your eye take over, and it's always, you know, going to tell you what you see, that will trump your brain, which is telling you what it knows. Like, stop
mm-hmm.
worrying about the fact that the object is, you know, turning or in shadow, or is there a reflected light there, and only look at shapes and patterns. It's really very interesting. And again, I'm going to go out on a limb and say sometimes better than what we struggle to, you know, get right. I mean, I think that's the fight we always fight.
Well,
it may look like it's in shadow, but it should be in light. So I'm going to make it lighter. Just paint the shape and stop thinking about what the object is.
Yeah, because I'm a huge shape painter. I mean, I talk about painting shapes nonstop. And I wish it was easier to help train people's eyes to see shapes and not things. And I think this is a great idea. The next one we're going to talk about is a great idea. But it's so important to be able to do that, because you think, oh, well, that is a Christmas ornament or whatever. And therefore,
right.
because of all the Christmas ornaments in my life I've known, I'm going to paint it like a Christmas ornament and totally miss the shapes
yeah.
and the shadows and everything else. So it's
right.
really hard to turn your brain off.
And, you know, it's funny because that applies whether you're a studio painter or if you're painting plein air. Because if you think about it, people try to paint, you know, individual trees. Big mistake. Anybody who's worth their salt, a good landscape painter, will always tell you to paint the shapes, block it
yeah.
in.
And I think that's the
lesson.
Best example there is
yeah.
painting a big mass of trees. And people
yeah.
freak out. For good reason. It's a big, huge green mush mess with billions and billions of leaves. And you look at it and you're like, oh, my God. And we just did this in my workshop on Tuesday. The background was this big, huge tree area at the knob at Cape Cod, by the way, which is what we were painting. Thank you very much, Margaret. Yeah. And so, and I was like, you guys, it shapes. Look at the light. Look at the pattern. Look how. And once we did that, it helped, but still, it's really intimidating. Really
mm-hmm.
intimidating. And you just have to break it down, if that
yep.
makes any sense. So the another way to kind of turn your brain off a little bit and just see shapes is to use a mirror. And by looking into a mirror and you see your subject, you're turning things around. So everything's backwards. And abstracting
mm-hmm.
things a bit is a really good way to help you just see the shapes. So it forces you to see, and it helps you to stop thinking so much about what it is. And you just, it's a great idea.
And you know, a lot of painters will use mirrors to check their paintings, because
right.
when things aren't right, if you turn around and you look in a mirror, you'll see it just jumps right out at you. It's just
okay,
that
so
little bit. Yeah?
No, go ahead.
Well,
finish
no, what were you
going to
say?
Why?
Well,
why
I was going to say.
Though, when I take a photo
yeah.
is when I always
yeah.
see something wrong. Why
well,
is that?
It's a little bit of the same thing. Because
yeah.
I think it's, you know, it's 3D perception versus a 2D image. You know,
mm-hmm.
When you're looking at a photograph, if you look at a photograph of your work, you know, you're just one step removed from the reality.
It's true.
Sort of, you know, the other thing is taking a break always gives you a fresh perspective,
yeah.
so to speak. You know, when you walk away, sometimes they look better. Sometimes you walk in the room and you think, how did I miss that? It's, you know, I've got that horizon all wrong. And then you can walk right
yeah.
up to it and make the change. So I think, you know, part of it is there's two things at work. Part is when you're up in front of your painting, it's kind of like your world, and you become
mm-hmm.
so used to looking at it that you need to get some distance. But the other thing is, when you're doing the act of painting, if you can, it all comes down to shapes and values. If you can abstract it, right, maybe you start mm-hmm. out fresher. I don't
right.
know, all good tools, though.
Yeah, I agree.
All right. Our next exercise, it's called tonal study, T-O-N-A-L, as in you are studying the tones. In this one, it's more of a subtractive value study where you start with, you know, obviously, usually it's a transparent or an umber or something. Keep it one tone. And then you actually lift away pigment in order to reveal lighter values. And, you know, I've actually seen artists who will take a rag with some Gamsol and, you know, scrub away to get back to the clean canvas to bring out the white. But it's sort of, instead of applying paint, you're on this very dark masked in subject and you're lifting the color. And what happens is they become, it forces you to sort of see this is the darkest dark I'm starting with, and then I'm pulling out, like, this is a medium value. I'm scrubbing here. This is going to be my lightest light. They become beautiful little renditions in themselves. But if you go back in, once it dries a little bit, and you start to play with your pigment and you really pay attention to matching the value of your color to the value of the single tone on the canvas, it's a great way to build a painting. I don't know for everyone if that would be a finished painting, but what a great exercise teach you. You know, sort of, you can start with the basics, light, medium, and dark, and then you can get into a full range of 10 values. But, mm-hmm. you know, it's sort of just, again, getting you, sometimes any way you can help someone see the difference in values without color getting in the way, they can learn a lot. They get there faster. So start dark and lift away and see if that doesn't improve your perception of value.
What a great idea. Mm. That's a wonderful idea. Okay. This next one is something that Dreema and I did for a long time. I think Dreema still does it. And I was so surprised when Rusty Jones submitted this idea on the AHA Facebook page. And it's called musical easels. Basically, everyone puts a canvas on their easel, typically 6x6, something small, and everyone has a different simple photo to paint from, and in their hand is either their brush or palette knives and their paper towels. And everyone starts at their own painting, and music comes on, usually it's something pretty wild, and as soon as the music flips to another song, everyone moves to a different easel in clockwise direction. And so what happens is everyone paints on every painting, and what you gain from this is truly remarkable. The most important thing I see is you have to go up to a painting and analyze in no time what needs to be done to, quote-unquote, progress or fix the painting. Secondly, you get a chance to go to someone's, I call them workstations, and try out another easel, and you get to see what other people use. You get to see how they mix their paints, what they mix on it. So it gives you a chance to maybe discover something that you didn't know existed and you never tried it before. Because you can sit there in a workshop and admire someone at their easel and think, oh, that's a cool easel. But until you've tried it, you don't know if it makes sense for you. The other thing is, when you go to the easel and you're only going to paint and you know it for a short period of time, it takes away all that stuff that comes with being nervous or, I don't know what that stuff's called.
Plus,
you know,
you're
going to
move on, right?
Well, you know, you're only going to be there for 2 minutes or however long it is. So you just kind of go and put the paint down and do what you can. And so there's not any stigma. There's not any pressure. And it's a really cool exercise. It's very freeing, and there's so many things that come from it that I think it's a really great. But the best thing is that, you know, you may have 15, say there's 15 people in the workshop, 12, however many. That means that 15 times you're going to walk up to a painting and very quickly have to assess what you're going to do next. And that is invaluable.
I learned a lot about myself on that exercise, and it wasn't pretty. I realize.
In what way? In what way?
I'm going to tell the truth. This is like really exposing my flaws. Well, because
oh,
I felt like,
me, I've
okay,
done that many times.
I thought I can fix this, and I'd fix it, and then I actually like would move on and glance back to see if the person coming to it was going to wreck what I had done. And I
okay,
thought,
we have two type A's on this show this month and next.
I was like, gosh, I just fixed it. What is she doing? No. And it was terrible.
Oh, so
I thought, I am a terrible person. I cannot let go. I don't know. You know, I kind of get vested, I guess, invested really quickly in anything that
in
I'm
your
facing.
2 minute approach.
And I had a really hard time letting go. So, yeah, maybe I should practice that more. It sounds like it's something I need to work on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it didn't come easily to me.
Yeah.
But I enjoyed it, that being said. And you know the other thing I'm going to say about that exercise, if someone employs it in a workshop, it gets everybody moving, which
mm-hmm.
people
yeah.
can get real tight right in front of their own easels. And I think
yes.
getting some, you know, nice pumped-up music and getting folks to move around the workshop space is a good thing.
I agree.
There you go.
I agree.
Okay, we're going to stop talking about my flaws now and move on to the fat brush exercise. I love
or
this
the fat
exercise.
Or the long, the large palette knife exercise. I'm just going to stick that
okay,
in.
Okay, or the really big palette knife, right? I guess you can't really call a palette knife fat like they would a brush where it gets all those nice hairs. So, what it does is it forces you to stop fussing about. You know, we always hear use the biggest brush you can if you want to paint loose or knife. And I think that by going with a larger tool here, you, again, you are forced to kind of get down the message that you're trying to send, whether it's, you know, you want a big dark value or you just want a broad expanse of color. Using that larger brush or knife teaches you also how to, it forces you to manipulate the tool. So with a brush, if you have an area, you know, where you need a really thin line, you got to turn that brush and you got to use the edge of it. And you sort of, it forces you to stop, you know, painting like a house painter up and down and really get some technique going. And I know with the knife, it's only when, you know, for me, I keep trying to learn your palette knife business, but it's only when you're forced to use the tip or to use the edge or to really draw it across in a different way. You know, when I play golf, I always say this, you know, I am not the golfer in my family, but I'm perfectly happy if I just have maybe a driver and a 7-iron. In fact, the truth is I could probably play 9 holes with a 7-iron only and I'd be perfectly happy. And I think that's because I can manipulate it a little bit. I think the same thing is true with a brush. If it's the only brush in your hand, you're going to figure out how to make all the strokes you need and you might learn something in the midst of it. So use the biggest brush you can. And if you're in Scott Christensen's workshop, he's going to have you hold a brush that's got a 24-inch handle and you're about 3 feet away from the canvas. And you learn a lot from that, too.
Yeah, very true. Very, very true. No, I think that's a great idea. And I have a tendency to start out my classes with allowing people to use the smaller one. And then as we get a bigger knife, then I think it's easier. But I think it's a great idea. It's a great idea, and I might have to start doing this.
See if you like
okay.
it first. Try it yourself. Yeah.
Yes. The next one is black and white studies, kind of similar to the first one of just using one color. But this is a great way to resolve issues of composition because quick, often smaller studies, and when you do a black and white study, it helps all artists choose stronger compositions and reduce the number of adjustments to made during the painting process. I think you'll find that almost all of these ideas are here to simplify and help you make choices in your paintings quicker, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And it would be really cool if people listening to this show said, you know what, I'm going to do one of these once a week for the next 16 weeks, for the next 4 months. How cool would that be? I think it's a great idea. So.
Hmm.
Yeah.
I think I just got another homework assignment. But it's a good one, and I will try. No, the truth, you know, for me, especially plein air, those small little thumbnails, which I always do with a black marker, they often lead me to the better painting. I think they help. They do help you kind of organize the composition, or, you know, if you're going to move things around on your canvas, it's a great way to work it out.
Yeah.
All right, we have a tip that someone has shared with us. Angeline Marie Martinez.
She was in my workshop a couple months ago in Ventura.
Oh, there you go. Well, she's going to tell us about a workshop instructor who did this with oils. Layer the color thinly over and over until the very first layers are lights and the last layers are the darks. It was nerve-wracking, she said, but the results were gorgeous because in this case they were doing a lion, and she said it looked like the lion was in 3D. So that's
kind of interesting. I think what she's saying is the first layer is light, and then you put the next layer on, but you have to leave the light showing through.
Right.
And then you keep going from light all the way to dark. I don't know how many layers it was, but it's just a really cool approach. And she did make a comment that she wouldn't do it again with the lion because it was super hard. Something a little simpler might make sense.
Yeah, I can imagine that. But it's kind of the opposite of that tonal study where you lift the dark away.
Yeah.
In this case, you're starting clean and you're laying each thin glaze almost over and over.
Yeah.
That would be fun to try.
I think it would be hard, but I think it would be really, really wonderful. Okay, so Paula Riley shared a great idea on the AHA Facebook page. She, I guess years ago, she took a workshop with Vicki McMurray in Texas. She placed, I'm going to totally do this, she placed a masking tape line on the floor back away from each of the artist's easels. And then what she did is, like, every 20 minutes, she'd say, okay, now's the time, and everyone had to go back to that, wherever that spot was, and evaluate the progress of your paintings. Because we always say, don't forget, step back, take a look. And it's really easy as a teacher, because when I'm going around to all the easels, I'm always looking at my painting and finding things wrong with it. But I don't think the students do it as often as they should. And it's my fault, I should remind them. Part of the time, too, is you have a hard time, in some cases, getting, you know, 10 or 20 feet away from where your easel is, because, you know, you could be back up against a wall.
Sure.
But I think you need to take the time to flip your easel and stand back and take a look. And I love the fact of this idea. I think it's a great idea.
Yeah, you could just set a timer, and that's a signal for everyone to take a break.
Yep.
Plus, in a way, that helps you make the most of the 20 minutes you've got when you're up there.
Very, very true.
We're combining exercises. I love it.
I know.
All right. Our next tip is to try to draw or paint only the negative spaces. So this is another fun exercise that kind of helps you see differently. You know, we all know that painting the shape instead of the object is like a mantra that should be in our head. Paint the shape. You know, stop thinking of it as a boat and paint the shape, that routine. If you can view the whole painting composition as being made up of puzzle pieces, sort of shapes that fit together, almost always you're going to have a better composition.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can give some attention and weight to the negative space, you're going to be able to perceive value changes. So this is very simple to do with a sketchbook if you want to sort of try it before you actually attack a canvas. But if you just sort of set up even a still life, there are things like the shapes between, let's say it's a bowl of flowers. The shapes between the flowers are obviously important, but you will look at the whole composition differently if you focus on those first. This is something that I only do when I think of it, but it's something that I'm actually thinking of, like putting a little note on my easel to remind myself of, because it's, I think it's not only important, but I think it benefits everything about the painting.
Mm-hmm.
So I think folks should give it a try and see if it gives you what I think. This is one from school. You know, I have to tell you, I'm now reaching back in my brain 30 years more, but you don't need to point that out. it was one of the most beneficial things I think I ever learned. So
that's
fantastic.
It's a great idea. Very good idea.
I'm going to go on, I think, with one of the two exercises that we found suggested by Mitchell Albala. I think I said that right. Bala. So. Yeah. He's the author of a book called Landscape Painting, Essential Concepts and Techniques for Plein Air and Studio Practice. So he had two exercises that I thought made a lot of sense. The first one is the four value exercise. And in this, he says, I'm going to just quote him, the four value exercise is one of my favorites because it is always such a revelation to students. It is as much about value relationships as it is about the simplification and massing. The goal is to translate the subject using just four values. Shapes must be kept relatively flat without any blending in between the values. He says, of course, there are more than four values in any subject, so this exercise forces us to make choices. Which one of the few valuables available is the best choice for each area of the painting? He says it's quite amazing to see how much can be conveyed with an economy of shapes and values, the very point of the exercise. Yeah. You know, you sort of break it down and see where you end up.
Yeah. It's a great idea. And I know it does simplify things, but it also makes you make really important choices. So you determine,
Absolutely.
Okay, there's a ton of values in this painting, but let's figure out which are the ones. And if you're going to limit it to four, it does make it hard. But Mitchell goes a little bit farther. With
yes,
another exercise called the two-value exercise. And I'm thinking about the pair workshop or the pair exercise we did on Monday, and I'm thinking it was so hard for everyone to do just three values that two values is really interesting. And here's what Mitchell says about this. This exercise also works with a limited set of values, but only two, black and white. Such strict value limitations ask the painter to make even more choices about how to interpret intermediate values. Which values will fall into white and which ones will fall into dark? Because there's no way, even if you're doing a pair that has light on it, you have probably four very obvious values. But if you can only use two, as the painter, you have to sit there and go, oh, does that one go dark or does that one go light? You know, you have to make those decisions. So like the four-value painting, the results can be a revelation. The high-contrast, pattern-like image that is produced is the most elemental, basic description of the underlying compositional energies. That's a pretty powerful statement he makes. Therefore, this exercise, and even on a smaller scale in pencil, can be used as a study to evaluate the weight and distribution of shapes in a composition. So as you, as the artist, are having to make those choices, you are basically putting a value on the compositional energies of the painting. And so this exercise, as I said, can be used as a study to evaluate the weight and distribution of shapes. And this type of study is called the value plan or the NOTAN, and the strongest lessons in composition for the entire class, he said, were realized in this exercise.
I believe it. It's taking it down to like the most basic level, and it, you know, it really is very, it becomes a very graphic exercise.
Exactly. Yeah.
And it's a cool thing. You know, there are NOTAN applications you can apply on your phone. I'm sure folks have seen them. Just like you can put a value study on a photograph, you can bring it right back to NOTAN where it will show you, you know, it makes the choice of what's black and what's white. And the patterns are really beautiful, and it's probably something that I think every painter could use more of.
Mm-hmm.
Good thing.
Got it.
Yeah, a lot to think about there.
I know.
Now, Wendy Thompson shared an idea that she used when she taught a plein air workshop this weekend. She said it was nearly dark when they started on Friday evening, so painting outdoors wasn't an option. She said, you know, one of the hardest things about painting plein air is simplifying what we see and keeping the focal point at the forefront. So she set up a really complicated still life and had the class pick a small part of it to paint, keeping value and focal point as the task. That was it. And she said it worked out really well. So even though there was all this noise.
Yeah, what a great exercise, like on a rainy day, if you're teaching a plein air workshop. Because what you're doing is you're teaching that focus and editing that is so hard when you're painting plein air, but you're doing it in a still life setting. I think it's brilliant. Very smart.
Yeah, you just said editing, and that really is exactly what it is, whether you're outside and you've got to narrow it down to what you're painting or you're inside.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about making those choices.
Yeah.
Good
okay,
one.
Rusty Jones had another exercise that he wanted to share, and he calls it observation. And this is hard.
This is
I'm
hard.
I'm telling you right now. Observation is when the class focuses on an object or scene for 5 minutes, then turns their back to the object and paints it without looking again. Then they paint it while looking at it, and then they compare the two. But you can't tell. I would never tell them what's coming next. I would say, okay, here's the item.
Yeah.
Look at it for 5 minutes. Okay, now it's gone away. Paint it. You have, you know,
go
15
ahead,
minutes
yeah.
or whatever. And then bring it back and say, okay, now paint it looking at it. And I bet the result is not what you would think, if that makes any sense.
Interesting. I read something about Constable doing this when he was ill. His doctor told him to take a walk every day, look at a painting for 15 minutes, go home and paint it from memory until he,
mm-hmm.
you know, one section of the painting, until he could reproduce the whole thing. I kind of thought it was probably just to get him out for a walk, but
yeah.
It is an interesting thing. What does your mind pick up and how much can you hold on to?
You know, I forgot about this. I used to do an exercise where I would give everyone a blurred version of a photo and say, okay, start painting. And they're like, what? And all it was blurry shapes. And they're like,
huh.
Okay. And then, you know, a third of the way into the painting, I'd give them another photo that was the same photo but less blurry. So, and then at the end of the painting, once they'd already put all the shapes in and kind of figured out all the solutions, I gave them the actual photo that wasn't blurred.
That is a
and
great
so
idea.
It really is, I have to say. Because the biggest problem people have
yeah.
is starting with that building the painting and not wanting to put all the fun, cool details and everything in the beginning. And it was fun, but boy, it made a lot of people kind of mad. What do you mean I'm painting these blurry shapes? I'm like, just paint them. Hang in there with me.
Trust me. That's right. Trust your teacher. I like
exactly.
It.
Oh, yeah.
Well, all right. Well, Becky Hicks had an idea. And again, this was great because folks were, you know, you asked and folks were posting them right on
I know.
The
it was awesome.
Facebook page. And she says she's taught a few workshops recently on value. The first day of the workshop, we made a 9-value scale using only burnt sienna, ultramarine blue, and titanium white. We then proceeded with our subject, which was a cow portrait.
She paints amazing cows, by the way.
I know.
Yeah.
And completed the painting in grayscale by noon of the second day. After the value study, we painted our subject in color. Students were amazed at how they were able to see the values and mix more accurate color. And she says it worked out really well. And she even included her value study
yeah.
and color portrait so we could
yeah.
see it. Mixing and painting your own value scale helps you focus and learn to see the value. And, you know, I think it's true. You know, the point of all of these exercises is to help us see the elements that make a good painting. You know, it's really helpful if you can look at every painting you do, not as a finished product or the end unto itself, but really it's just a step along the way. Every painting gets you painting better. Right?
True.
We need to remember that, you know, what most of us enjoy about painting is the act of doing it. And, you know, that's so satisfying. And it, I don't know what part of our brain, somebody has to write a paper on this. When you paint and that thing happens where, you know, time disappears, you know, when you're in that zone, I know all those athletes know what I'm talking about, you know,
mm-hmm.
that's the reason that we're painting. I'm speaking for myself. I think if you end up with a painting that's a keeper, terrific. But after last week and talking to Carol Marine, if it ends up in the scrap pile or in her bad art burn pile, I think that's okay too. You know, when she said the bigger her bad art pile was, it was a good thing now because that meant that she had tried things. And trying
yeah.
things sometimes results in failures, but it all takes you down the road to painting more. And I think, mm-hmm. you know, for everybody, you need to love the process of painting, and you learn a lot or a little along the way. And it's all part of just developing as an artist and really, I think, enhancing the way we see the world.
Mm-hmm.
That's
totally
what
I agree.
Would say.
I agree.
So,
I agree.
Yeah.
So if you if there are any other great workshop exercises that we haven't talked about that you have found, please feel free to either email me or put them on the comments section of this show, the posting for this show on any of my Facebook sites, because I'd love to keep a list and keep building it and do another show on this, because I think this information is so helpful for artists and also for workshop teachers. And I'd love to continue to be able to grow kind of this as a wonderful database. So,
a great idea.
Yeah.
Put it in the kit. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
I think
well,
it would
see
be great.
If I think of any more, but this was really fun. I feel like it's fired me up to do a little bit of it. So I hope it's done the same for everybody else.
And don't we have a guest for our show next week?
We have a guest for a show in November.
Oh, November. My bad. Okay.
If you're talking about Randy Sexton.
Yeah. I was thinking it was next week. So.
Yep. I am
fresh
out of his workshop, which was my treat to myself during the month of September. I couldn't think of anything. I mean, I thought to myself, what would be better than leaving my job and going to Vermont at the end of September to paint? Sure. And I have to tell you, it was heaven. I went to it was like artist camp. All of our food was taken care of. My bed was made. The room was clean. All I had to do was show up and paint every day. So I learned an awful lot from Randy, and I'm really looking forward to talking to him, because I found him to have a really great perspective. But
awesome.
Yeah,
we will have something for the show next week. I promise.
We're gonna absolutely. And I have to say, as Leslie and I were discussing, it may be only 5 weeks until Thanksgiving, but guess what that means for the holidays?
I know.
Right there, we are there, folks. So everybody, get their artwork together and prepare your cards if you send them out and all the rest of it, because the deadline is coming. The deadline is coming. All right. Well, have a busy week.
Thank you. I will. And thank you so much.
I know
much,
you will.
Margaret,
and I'll
for
talk to
all
you.
Your help with the show. I really, really, really appreciate it.
Well, I love it, as you know.
Happy painting.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.